I'm Donald Glover, and you are watching or listening to the Post Credit Scene Podcast.
Welcome to Arrakis, my niggas.
Welcome. We here.
To Arrakis.
Yeah.
The Post Credit Scene Podcast.
Can tell that Jason's been there. It's got dry elbows.
Nice start to the pod still. Yeah, cream that.
No, I'm joking. You don't, okay. Bro.
I thought, hey, yo, those allegations are serious.
Anything so seriously?
He signed the sand quite up to his arms, isn't it?
That's a serious allegation, bro.
It's the Arrakis sand, bro. It's the desert. You think about that. Post Credit Scene Podcast. No, it's the horse podcast. The last episode was, anyway. Tried to make it the horse podcast at the start, remember?
He did. And at the end.
Did he come back?
He came back.
I ain't come back at the end.
Yes, he did.
I ain't come back, bruv.
You 1000% did.
First of all, guys.
Manny did listen back to the app, to be fair.
You guys do know that I'm part of the podcast, right?
Yeah. It's funny when you start the podcast saying, I'm not going to be involved. And then you're
and
involved.
And then gets involved.
Yeah, someone said, grab a mic.
Someone brought that up, actually, when I was listening to the, they listened to the pod. I was like, wait, horse wasn't meant to be on this.
Fuck them.
They didn't hate, though. They just said.
Probably the haters. I know who you are.
I don't think we're
you know what? Do you know what certain man only comment on posts of us, yeah, if I'm not in it? Have you got that?
No.
Who are you talking about?
I'll show you later.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe they just hate you.
Yeah, facts.
They probably have a good reason to.
Nah.
Yeah. What have you done to people, bro?
I don't know, man. Large wooden that.
Yeah, you're definitely single, man.
But if it's... Okay, do you know what? No, I'm not even going to engage it.
The Post Credit Scene Podcast, a 14HQ original. Huss doesn't have haters, they're imaginary in his head. But we are a 14HQ original, lovers of film and TV. Boys, welcome back to the pod. How are you doing?
Good, my guy.
I'm feeling spicy, man. But we're
spat?
Here.
You're feeling spat. You didn't even mean that.
Didn't mean that.
You're feeling spicy.
Come on. That was sick, actually.
Review for Dune Part 2.
I'm excited for this one.
One of the most highly anticipated films of the year, definitely.
Maybe of recent times.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Sci-fi-wise, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Anticipated sci-fi film since.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say Inception, but I might be bugging out with that one.
Since Inception? I mean, sure. Maybe, probably.
How are you guys feeling about this going into watching the film? We all watched it separately. Well, or watched it.
I watched it before.
We watched it. Jason watched it by himself because
might have been a different. Yeah, he don't like chilling with us. Yeah, clearly.
That ain't it. Again, serious allegations are being thrown around on the pod.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Jason, man. Sometimes.
My first question then, line of questioning. We've kind of gone straight into the pod, which is fine. Two ended question. How did you feel about Dune as in part one, and then how were you looking forward to Dune part two? What was your anticipation for Dune part two? Open to everyone and anyone.
I liked Dune Part 1. I thought Dune Part 1 was okay. It was kind of slow, but I get it. It was more laying the foundation of what the world is. It was more focusing on world building and letting us know what the characters are and the hierarchy that it sets us up for the rest of whatever the series is going to be. So I didn't mind it. It was kind of slow, but I didn't mind it for what it was. And anticipation for Dune 2, I was hyped based on the reviews that were coming out. People calling it Denis Empire Strikes Back. One of the best sci-fi films. I was really, really excited for the film.
Oh, yeah, nice.
And I said before on like a previous episode, I was like, the second watch done me right, like 100%. Like after the, I watched the first one the first time, and maybe I had. Do you know what? I think I do you know that sometimes, guys? Yeah, like you go to cinema and you have a bad like cinema experience, like. You wait long for the concession. You might go there with seats are dirty or whatever it is, and then it just ruins like your actual like movie experience. I think that was what actually happened to me. That I was in a bad mood when I watched the first one, but I came out of it really disappointed. Like I was so disappointed, you know. But I was like, telling myself, "Nah, it's calm." It kind of felt like Harry Potter definitely had his part one, where it was like nothing much really happened, you know. But I guess something still kind of happened. But after the second watch on Netflix.
Didn't Dumbledore die in part... Not Dumbledore. Didn't Voldemort get the Elder Wand in part one?
Correct, but that was the literal last scene.
Yeah, it was the last scene. That was a cool scene.
There was a sixth scene, but it was the literal last scene.
Yeah.
When I watched it the second time at home, Netflix, subtitles, and all of that, like I actually really, really, really fell in love with it. Like I don't think I've ever had a transition from that, from like rating it like a 5 point something to like a good 7 in a while. Do you know what I'm saying? And I was like, I'm so glad, but I did that, and it went straight into the second one. So
right.
I was already gassed just from the watch. Yeah. I was gassed.
Mm. But,
yeah. I hear that. No, I was in love with the first film. To be honest, like Dune is something that I've been hearing about because obviously this is the second iteration because there used to be a Dune film back. I want to
1984.
And kind of like. My interest in Dune was like from that, and then my dad was like, "Oh yeah, Dune's fucking amazing and stuff like that." So I was just
that's
like,
sick though.
That's voice like that.
I'm fucking.
What's you? That's voice.
He might sound like you, know.
No. But it's just because you know when somebody's like gassing something to you all your entire life, and you're just like, "Oh, stop waffling."
Yeah.
And then when I actually did and went ahead and watched the film, I was like, "Oh, he actually knows what he's talking about. Dune is fucking sick." Like as you said, like the first one was a little bit slow, but the world building, and I do think like the ambush, like the climactic ambush, I think was kind of like a good payoff to kind of like.
I do. But we'll get there.
Like in the first film, I meant like.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
To kind of like give us something rather than like just a lot of you know info dumping.
Exposition,
exactly.
Well, if anything, they flipped it, right? They had most of the fight scenes right at the start, you know.
You want the first one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. If you want to.
Well, the first quarter of the film.
Yeah, first quarter. but yeah, no. Expectations were super high into the second one, and yeah, we'll get into it more later on.
Cool. My experience of it was same as Hoss, unfortunately. Very unfortunate for me. I have the same opinion as you.
My guy.
Re-watching it the first time, I fell asleep in the cinema. This was before I became an attempted cinephile, if you like.
Yep.
Lover of film and TV and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I fell asleep in the cinema when I watched it the first time. So naturally, as we decided to, as we went to the part two screening last Wednesday, the Wednesday gone, I watched it at home on Netflix. Really, really enjoyed the film, you know. Really enjoyed it. I even re-watched it again last night-ish when I got home. Didn't finish it, unfortunately, but really enjoyed it again. My views on Timothy have slightly changed.
Oh, for sure.
Even from the first film, but I'd say especially the second part two. I really like the film. We'll talk about it more as we get into the pod. But I think it's set up a very interesting what will be likely a third installment of Dune Part 3. So.
I've done like a lot of research in preparation for this episode as well.
Oh, you have.
So like, I'm very excited to see the
See how you guys' opinion on Dune 1 changed over time.
Yeah.
You think it's mainly because how you guys view films now? Now that you actually review films a lot more often, and you like.
I think it's definitely got a tone to it for sure. For sure. I definitely think it's like it's naive of me if I say no. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So yeah, no, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, I also think I had a different viewing experience. I think that also played a role. First time I watched it, I was in the cinema. I might have been tired because I definitely fell asleep in the film. But watching it at home, I really appreciated certain things that I didn't the first time.
Same.
What I will say just on that, right? Because it's quite funny. The director,
Denis Villeneuve.
French-Canadian, right?
I think so.
Oh, I love him, you know.
But he also directed Blade Runner 2040.
Which made us fall asleep as well.
Do not like that film, so I just thought it was kind of a...
What is it about the film you didn't like? Because there's something that I want to say about Denis, but go on.
Me and Jason's first viewing experience wasn't good. Like, I can't lie, we went to the cinema at like 2 in the morning, bro. It was like 1 a.m. or something like that.
Oh, it was late.
It was the last showing of that day. We stayed for like 40 minutes and dipped. I think that was the only time in like... maybe 10-15 years that I've walked out of a cinema.
It's the only one that I've ever walked out of.
Yeah, but it was so... And it wasn't like I was asking Jace, let's go out. It was just... At the same time, it was like, yo, should we go?
I think it
was slow, man.
I think what my problem is, which could be attributed to his first film and even in the second one, he spends a lot of time...
Prepping. And just building worlds.
And building the worlds and stuff like that. And like, not that I'm saying like, oh, we need
that's fine. Stuff and stuff yeah.
Like that. But I feel like he just lingers on it longer than you need to.
If somebody isn't already invested in the film, they can lose interest within like half an hour.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah,
because he hasn't got to the point yet.
But.
Or even like alluded to the point. You know what I'm saying? What he's doing here is that he's picked like, which he does for like a lot of films, by the way. He picks like one or two like characters. And the first like 20, 30 minutes of the film is literally centered,
yeah,
like around them.
Yeah.
And then you don't really get the understanding of different perspectives until like the second act, maybe.
He did that a lot in Doom Part 1.
Yeah. Huh? He did that best. But he did that best.
That goes back to what I was saying. That's why I even asked, does the opinion change? Because one aspect of cinema that I enjoyed a lot more recently than I didn't before was like stuff like cinematography, framing.
Of course.
Away from the shot. Yeah. That's what I started to appreciate a lot more. And listen to Denis talk about filmmaking and what he loves and what he does. He's come out and says that he doesn't care about dialogue. Like, dialogue's not important to him.
Funny enough,
I think for the second one, the dialogue has been...
But I think that's because of the source material. I don't think that's because of him.
Okay,
But watching that film and hearing you guys talking about Blade Runner, that's what asked, like, what do you like about it? It's because I appreciate the fact that he came out and said that, because obviously cinema can be all sorts of things. Mm. But the fact that, especially visually, is what he's focused on mainly and what he does. He's like, if I go watch the new film from now on, I know what I'm in there for.
Now, like you said, now I can appreciate a lot more.
Again,
at this point, like, I might view
it.
It makes a huge difference how you view films, in my opinion, when you get a better understanding of who is making it.
Also, like, if we're gonna stick on him just for the fourth thing, I love obsession. I love people that are obsessed with their craft. Do you know what I'm saying?
And you can tell he is.
Bro, this guy, I saw an interview where he was talking about Dune and he wrote a storyboard for Dune when he was 13 or 14.
With his brother.
It's ridiculous. So they showed like the storyboard of it, and then they asked him like how many of these made like the film. Ever he was just like some of them are like really similar to the film. So he was obsessed with that story for so long. Do you know what I'm saying? And he's so honest. Like he was sort of talking about how like he with obviously there's 6 books, right? But Warner have only commissioned, as far as we're aware, 3 films. Okay, so what's exciting is that he said that he might not continue after the third film, because he said that after the third film he thinks that the writer became a little egotistic and was making his point too harshly, because at the time Dune was centered around mocking religion and political strifes, right? So apparently in the 4th, 5th, and 6th book
you have different writers. I think the writer passes away. He passed away. I think the later films were written by other people.
Well, he said that the later films, he was like, they become more psychedelic, more than like story driven. You know, they become more like angry, and he was like, he doesn't see how they can be adapted at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, so and that's why there's a few things that are changed in the first 2 films, but obviously we'll get to that too. But that's honest from him. He easily take this as the biggest film in the past 5-6 years, or biggest sci-fi film in 10 years, right? But and make the money. But he's like, nah, like I want to do my 3 favorite stories, you know, which is fucking amazing.
Cool, man. Dune Part 2 is a 2024 American epic sci-fi fiction. The reason I'm interested by the 2024 aspect of it is because an interesting conversation could be had about if this came out last year, where would this be looking at in terms of Oscar? Well, being Oscar worthy, shall I say. We'll get into that later. It's co-produced by Denis Villeneuve, as we said. It's the sequel to the first Dune film, and it's part 2 of the adaptation of the 1965 novel by Frank Herbert. This film follows Paul Atreides as he seeks to unite the Fremen people of the desert planet Arrakis to wage a war against House Harkonnen. And stars Timothée Chalamet, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin. Really like Josh Brolin as an actor.
Yeah, my god,
one of my favorites.
Huge fan. His presence is insane. Stellan Skarsgård, again, another great actor.
Fantastic.
Dave Bautista, Zendaya. Zendaya's just gone. She's
what a performance,
rising up in my...
What a performance.
She's just rising up in my opinion of her as an actress. Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Christopher Walken. It's a star-studded cast, man. It's absolutely insane. My first question to you guys. Just want to discuss Timothée Chalamet as Paul Atreides and Zendaya as Shani, and sort of how does Paul's journey in the first film sort of alter in the second film, and how did you see that depicted by Chalamet? Open-ended question to everyone, obviously.
I can go. Look, his like in regards to like Paul and Shani, what I loved about I don't even know. So I rewatched the 1984.
Oh, sick!
Did you?
Yeah,
they changed a few things.
Bro,
with
guys,
character,
I don't like research. Like honestly.
Yeah, they changed a few things with Shani's character, which is quite interesting.
Changed what I liked of it, they changed like how she was presented, not her lines or anything. Like everything was all the same, yeah. But how she was presented and stuff, they changed a little bit, which I thought was actually kind of like tasteful to the times. But if you watch the first one, guys, yeah, do you know that or the original, it starts off with one of the Queen Reverend people doing the whole, yeah, doing the whole like description of like the spice mines or whatever, right? Yeah. And obviously in this one, Shani yeah. is the one, but we don't see her face; it's just dark.
Yeah.
And she's talking about like, oh, da, 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 da. And it's cool because she doesn't say much in the first one, but she's actually the narrator.
Yeah, yeah.
For it, which is I think is such a beautiful touch to like. Like foreshadowing how important her role is going to be. Do you know what I'm saying? But yeah, like in like I think like the attitude from Paul in the first one to the second one. I think in the first one he was so driven towards the end, obviously, on revenge and etc. And then he goes up like this, and then towards the end of the film he actually goes down.
You say revenge because of the death of Lester, his dad.
Of his dad, right, and right. That kind of stuff. And then obviously at the start of the second film and stuff, he's more focused on finding a community and like a family and being part of like something bigger and getting revenge in a more long term fashion. Like, oh, let's build this thing that we can retake this planet by having, you know, us.
I would disagree actually, because like in the first film, obviously we were told that he has got this sort of destiny. He's the
yeah, but he didn't believe it though.
Yeah, no, he didn't. He didn't believe in it in per se, but I think he was definitely looking at it as a way of like, I can use this prophecy.
No, but he done that towards the end though of the second film. He didn't do that for the whole thing. And
I think throughout the entire film it was kind of like the quote unquote plan, but I think towards the end of the film I think his motives changed, which we're probably going to get into a lot more further in that sense. But I think at the beginning of the film when he's speaking to his mum is
part two,
yeah, in part two, sorry, yeah, part two, she's like, look, you still got the prophecy, you can still kind of like galvanize all these people on your side.
So but she only had that motivation after she drank the elixir of life. Yeah, the water of life. Prior to that, she was actually trying to get him away from the prophecy.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think she.
What?
No. I think there's.
He's always sort of been told that this is his destiny.
No, yeah, she knew that he was important, but she didn't want him to be important to the Fremen people.
I feel like she wanted him to be part of the leader for different reasons.
Exactly.
So you know that the Reverend Mothers or the Bene Gesserits.
Yeah.
Those kind of like.
Yeah.
Reverend Mothers.
These niggas just taps on.
Bro, damn, it's crazy.
Are so scary. And I think what one of the cool things about Dune is it's like it's plots within plots. It's,
yeah,
it's, you know, backstabbing within backstabbing.
And scheming.
And yeah, and scheming and everything.
It's the Game of Thrones.
Sure.
Naturally.
Yeah. But it's like with Paul's mother, she was like, okay, cool. I want you to get revenge for your dad, and that's why she wanted him to be a leader. But once she drank the poison, I think she found
a different pathway.
Yeah, I think she flipped it in the sense of like, okay, we can then now, instead of just getting revenge,
use this for personal gain.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly, and that's why I think like she always wanted him to be a leader, but the reason changed throughout the film. And I think same happened with Paul Atreides, because at first he was just like, look, I don't really want to be their leader, but I'll take it on.
If I have to at this point.
I'll do it if I have to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then towards the end, especially after he drinks the poison and...
No, but he didn't even do I'll be a leader for him. He also constantly said that I can't be the leader. It has to be a vermin that leads them.
He did say that.
He's just there to help essentially.
But I guess the argument, I was asking you, Manny, okay, is that was he saying that to seem and to build himself as a humble leader that doesn't want it?
I disagree, guys.
Do you remember when Stilgard he said to him, he doesn't even want it? Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like they're bantering about so it. Fam. You know what I'm saying?
The dick riding
was crazy. It was nuts, bro. But like even that, like it told me like, wait a minute, is he aware? Like, is he doing it on purpose? Because towards the fourth act, I started to rate Paul as like a really smart guy. I think for a lot of it, he was like a sheep. you know what I'm saying? He was either listening to his mum or not listening, or listening to Shani, ever not listening, or listening to Stillguard, ever not listening. You understand? Even like towards the end, he became like his, he will, as far as I'm aware, it seemed like he was making his own choice. Exactly. But that tells me, prior to that, were you just building yourself up for that moment?
No, because he never wanted to go there in the first place. Remember, he wanted to stay.
I question that.
Why? Like, there were so many times where he literally almost stayed behind to fight, but the fourth.
Yeah, because he knew.
But I think that's what I'm saying. He has his like, what, half visions, right? Where he can't see everything yet, you know, until he drinks, right? So until then, he can't really see much, right? But he can see pieces. So what's so hard to believe here that he might be like, okay, I'm going to tell them, but I don't want to do it. But I know in my vision that I'm going to do it anyway, right? So he's telling them, okay, to build this like thing of like, wow, he's so humble. He doesn't want it. Da, da, da. But he knows that at the end of the day, no matter what happens now, he's going to end up doing whatever it is. That tells me that he's either a really, really, really smart.
I think that speaks to the internal battle that was going on with him, knowing that he has essentially been prepped up to be a chosen one, the destined one, the Messiah, if you like. Knowing that it's essentially his quote-unquote destiny, but not wanting to be the person that has to have that destiny.
But his argument is that he didn't believe in the destiny, right?
He did it in the first film. He didn't.
Yeah. But in the second film, he was actively looking for reasons not to do what he's telling him.
Exactly.
Because one of the main things is that if you go south, I mean, was it north?
North.
South.
So where would
they went? But they went north. That was.
If you go north, then everyone's going to die. Like people.
Go back north.
Yeah.
Go back south.
So where are they with where does the Furman live? Like the
it's north and south.
Okay, but where?
But the fight. South where? Is where his mum was. Like, you know where his mum was and all that. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So then they spend most of the film in south, right?
But when they go,
most of the film in the north at first.
At first.
Then they go south towards the end.
Okay, he said in the vision said that if you go south, so many people are going to die.
Correct.
He actively went out his way to make sure he didn't go south.
Yeah,
over
exactly.
And over and over again.
So then that means that he did believe it then.
No, but he didn't believe that he wanted to be he didn't want to
be the leader, but he might have believed that he was it.
No, he knows he is.
Yeah, those visions are the sign that he is essentially the chosen one.
But he didn't.
But he didn't want it.
Yeah, he didn't want to.
I don't think he did anyway. But I think he realized it had to happen.
I think up to the point he drank.
When he drank it,
that's when he was like,
okay, cool. Because I do think there was a slight personality shift as well.
Slight.
Big.
Yeah.
No, it was a huge shift, bro.
Yeah, huge shift. I just wanted to be a little.
Yeah.
Sorry, who played his mum?
Rebecca Ferguson.
Ferguson.
Yo.
Superb.
The casting is absolutely incredible.
Rebecca Ferguson.
Got anything bad to
Rebecca
say,
Ferguson? Even do you know? Yeah, after rewatching the first one, I was like, her role in the first one is so pivotal. She was probably the main actor in the first one. I understand, like, because
her character is.
Like, but she's the one that like introduced him to the Bennett. Yeah, she's the one that is teaching him the tricks of the trade. Okay, then after that, when they get like kidnapped, she's the one that like kills the guards and gets them out and blah blah blah, and like there's so much like to it, and she's the one that's planning ahead before Paul can even do that.
That's been like the Bene Gesserit's whole thing, right? Like even in the film with the prophecy, they were talking about how the prophecy's been there for 90 generations.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Stuff like that. But the prophecy was there and it's man-made. It's not.
Yeah,
God,
it's
not God-made.
And I think that goes into the whole theme.
There's the whole theme of the whole of Dune. Yeah, yeah.
That's
like
all man-made.
Faith, beliefs, and kind of like
they use it to control people.
Exactly.
But then, guys, don't you think it's nuts though? Yeah. By the way, this is a fantastic conversation. Okay, but don't you think it's absolutely like nuts though? If they're man building it and they're doing that, but it was still getting like these visions, and you're still getting like the Bene Gesserit that has certain powers and that can hear like her daughter. You're still getting like the Reverend Mother, who, by the way, till this point, yeah, as in the one for the king, yeah, we haven't seen many powers from her at all. Right, so she seems like the more of like of a traditional thing that we're hearing about spending lives, blah blah blah. Whereas like Paul's mum is doing it through power, influence, and then kind of magic as well, because she's passing a lot of these tests through what we can only assume to be like a higher power. So actually, is what they're
obviously man-made essentially, is your question?
Is it man-made, or is it actually a prophecy?
I think that's the interest. That's the whole concept of religion and faith.
It's nuts.
It's the whole point of belief and faith in terms of...
Exactly.
If you keep getting told something's going to happen, if you tell that there's a prophecy,
yeah.
you'll look at any signs to make you feel like that is part of the prophecy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little
of, like, I haven't read the book. I don't know.
And Javier Bardem character, is it Stilgard? He is the...
Confirmation bias.
Yeah.
As Jay said, I haven't read the books. I don't know much about the film, but I would assume... Or I would like there to be, like, somebody else that also fits the prophecy. Like,
I mean, they kind of do with, like, the Bene Gesserit have, they call them prospects.
Yeah, they'd be inbreeding, yeah. Guy,
like, if Paul Atreides doesn't make it to be the emperor.
That's crazy.
Never fit their whole thing.
But that's what they've been doing.
Yeah, no facts.
Austin Butler.
The Butler character who is, I'm forgetting the name, Fade Raha.
Yeah.
Who... like is another prospect, and
because he wasn't a prospect, his child is a prospect
mm-hmm. yeah exactly, but he's like a potential figure to kind of like just kind of like help their plans along. So it just goes back to the whole idea of like they do have people that, like, if one fails, we still have somebody who can still bring on whatever the Bene Gesserit. I mean, the Bene Gesserit.
Do you guys before we lose track of where we're going, do you guys think Timothy displayed that internal struggle of like the weight of destiny and being the alleged or supposed Messiah? Do you think that you saw that in you saw his struggle?
That we're even having this conversation tells that it's yes and no.
To be honest, I think that's probably what goes into my problems with the film a little.
What?
The same. I feel like Timothy had a good performance, and there were two scenes that I loved. They did. There was a scene when towards the end with Austin Butler, the fight scene.
Great scene.
And also the scene after he drinks the
water of life.
The water life, and he does that speech. I thought those two scenes were great. But apart from that, I thought it was just okay.
I
can literally watch every single scene for like you're
But don't you think but don't you think in the first one we got all Timothy? Right? We got all Paul.
Yeah.
And then in the second one we got so many more characters.
No, it's not the point of how much time we have with Timothy.
I don't think that's what he meant though.
It was the quality, but he said that in the first film we all had Timothy.
I mean, his second point was more to do with the variation that Timothy displayed, because he was essentially playing different characters.
He was meant to be, and that's the thing. I don't feel like they were greatly done. I feel like emotion was pretty much the same for the most part.
But I think isn't that the point of like a Messiah? Right,
but the idea was the quote that from didn't want to be the Messiah.
Who's like, the author again?
Of the books?
Frank Herbert.
Yeah, Frank Herbert, I believe.
He said like at the end of the second book, he was like it was a nod because
isn't the import 1 and 2 in one book?
So at the end of the book, he was saying how like it is. He was like, it's a massive call out, okay, to, he was tired of back then there being like a white person that came into like a foreign land and saved the world, da, 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 da. It was all films at the time, it was all books at the time, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, he wanted to end it in a way where, yes, we've got this person, you know, who is powerful, he's charismatic, but there's a massive stamp on his forehead, like, I'm still dangerous. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm still a terror, you know? And that's why I think it was important that he was extremely monotone and emotionless for most of it, because at the end, or towards the end...
Because I think there was a shift, when he had the obviously, of life. I think that's where we saw...
But we wouldn't have clocked the shift as much if he was...
Okay.
Well. If he wasn't as flat for like a look for like
I think flat's even a harsh word to you.
That's harsh, okay? But like if he wasn't if he was more emotive, right? If he was more emotive and then we see him shift, we might not, or frugal watchers of the film might not have clocked his voom.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? We're clocking, but I'm saying like a passive watcher might not have clocked that massive shift.
Interesting. Question, do you think the sand got, like, when they were having sex, do you think that like, the sand got in the way?
Okay.
You know what? This is the question that needs to be answered. Okay? Like,
oh man, sand's, have you man ever had sex on sand?
I cannot, so yeah. Okay. But like, but Yeah, it's an important question to ask. I did think as well. Yeah, like there should be like fans stuff. Like, shh, you know what I mean? Like their tents get like put up like pretty quickly. You know, but then also, what I did question myself is that they wear the wetsuits and they wear the suits to conserve water and balance. So if you're having like, you know, jiggy and that, yeah, what's going on? Like where's, are you doing it with the wetsuit and just taking off a little bit? You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
It's the right questions to be asking.
Yeah.
My other question, would you guys watch a Tyler Perry Dune film?
Yes.
Absolutely not.
That's insane. Yes.
He would cast Chris Brown as Paul Atreides.
Do you know what? I would watch it unironically. Like, that would be...
That's insane to me. You should go home.
I'm not saying that I would love it. This is a great film to hate watch. I love Tyler Perry to hate watch. I hate watching it.
I actually rate Tyler Perry, guys.
I thought I'd lighten the mood with that question, so yeah.
I actually rate Tyler Perry.
Oh, that's so dumb.
He's a good guy.
Yes. Oh my God, what question? Put that out in the universe.
I feel like you're going to get that clipped up.
Yeah.
But back to Dune. I'm interested in you guys, well, we discussed it earlier, but your thoughts on Lady Jessica's character and how sort of her allegiances were explored in the second film.
Really well, to be fair.
Yeah. What do you think were her motives in the end? What was she trying to gain?
I thought it was interesting because obviously she's been motivated by her daughter, who's essentially...
Especially in the second... Well, not especially.
Yeah.
In the second film.
Who's been played by...
Which is...
Anya Taylor.
Which is exciting to see how that comes to play when it comes to the next film. And even like when he was having the visions of people in the South dying, and then he was like seeing the back of a woman, and then it's like, oh, so that's obviously going to be your sister.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But yeah, like I feel Rebecca Ferguson's an amazing actor. Like,
yeah, she's great.
She put in a really good
point. And whoever shouted at her on set, fuck you.
Oh yeah, fuck you, bro.
Yeah, sucking mother, fam.
Fuck you.
Actually, seemed like someone that's great to interview. Can I just throw that out there as well?
Oh, for sure. And do you know, like, obviously watching the film, I was... the original film, what was a massive difference is that the child actually gave birth.
Yeah.
In the film. So like, as in like, there was like a creepy like 4-year-old, like 5-year-old, just walk around in like the Bene Gesserit like outfit with all black, and her face was bare pale, like blue eyes. It was proper scary. Do you know what I'm saying?
He made an intentional choice not to do that for this.
He did. He said that he was doing it for the pacing of the story. He was like, it would have slowed down the story if they had that whole scene and that whole thing, and then people would have questioned Paul's reasoning for leaving the South and come back. Whereas his sister was there, and the sister that he thought was going to die, blah, blah, blah. So he was like, it would have slowed down a whole plot, you know what I mean? Which I thought was a great choice. But then it makes you question, in the books, there's a 12-year time jump, right, to the next one. But like, what's going to be like, crazy is that you said that Anna, what's her name?
Anya Taylor
turns 28 this year.
My bad.
Okay.
So is there going to be a 2 time jumps or a larger time jump? Because in the part that we saw her in, she wasn't like a kid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So apparently there might be like a 15 to 18 year time jump, which is different to the books, just to accommodate for that, you know, which I think is a risk. Yeah. I think for the third film, it's a massive risk.
That jump and how are you gonna age the current actors though, even as well?
Like, tough.
It's gonna be a tough task.
I think aging the characters is fine, but it's just a tough task in selling it to me.
Yeah, as a consumer,
there's so much that's going to be happening within
15 years.
That how are you gonna make us kind of like
believe that it was all good or all bad?
Yeah. You know that, like, I still feel related to characters, because 15, 20 years is a long time. Yeah. People change, innit? So for me to still, like, believe in the story and believe in the characters, it seems like a tough thing to do. So, yeah, it goes.
Interestingly, I think what's so interesting about this film is that everything that's been spoken about so far, for the most part, has been the visuals. And we've only spoken about the story so far, but we will get that's into good, the though. Visuals. Because for me, to make a film that looks and sounds like the way it did, is a cinematic achievement and a masterpiece. Yep. Like every shot, choice of color grading, clean shot location, the angles, the use of like blocks for certain colors, and the felt intentional and purposeful. If you was in Arrakis, you knew you were in Arrakis. If you was with the house
Arrakis.
Yeah. What's that, sorry?
Arrakis.
Yeah, but we have pronunciation differences. Yeah. Right. If you was with House Harkonnen, you knew you were with House Harkonnen. Exactly. And the differences were so striking. It was beautifully done, man. Like the cinematography, we speak about that often now.
And the sound, by the way.
That's what that's what I mentioned earlier. The sound is so emphatic. You have to watch this in IMAX for me.
You have to.
If you can. It's a beautiful looking film. How do you think the aesthetics of the film contribute to the storytelling that Denny's trying to tell? Obviously, Greg Fraser, huge respect to you. He also did The Batman, superb cinematographer. Yeah. But yeah, talk to us.
Watched the EPK of the film where the actors were just talking about and stuff. And then he said it was important to him when he was pitching to Warner years ago now, like 7 years ago now, wherever it was, and he was like, most of the budget will be going on locations, studios shooting on location always cost them more, because if it's horrible conditions, you might do less of a scene, you know, but you might do it over 2 weeks. Yeah. Whereas they'd rather do it over 2 days. Do you know what I'm saying? So, but he was like, I don't care. Like, find the budget. Like, that's how we're doing it. And it's crazy. All the scenes in the south were shot in the Abu Dhabi desert.
Right.
Which is really impressive, but the conditions were crazy. Right?
Salome spoke about that. I think they said one of the scenes, I can't remember specifically which one, took a few months to do.
It was the scene where him and Shani took down the ship. Do you remember when they were running in between things and stuff?
That killed me. That was so funny. It's
fucking mad. Scene, like mad.
Yeah.
But
we'll get to it as well, like the action.
Yeah. Stuff like that. And then I saw Austin Butler. He wasn't on set with Josh Brolin and them, man. But his scene was shot on the hottest day of the year in Hungary, Budapest.
Right.
Right. And the scene, I'm talking about the scene in the Colosseum. And the Colosseum scene, okay, is crazy. He said that the Colosseum was there already. They just filled it up and done their thing, right? And he said that what they done, they put two massive blocks, because apparently part of the Colosseum was like broken up, but they put a block there, CGI'd it, right? And but he was like, he said that the blocks created this like microwave heat wave, you know, and that Denny, if you said to him, you have to feel like you're in Arrakis. You have to feel like the heat wave has got your head. You're bold. You're not wearing a hat. You're in the sun. Blah, blah, blah. You have to feel like you're fighting. If you don't finish this fight now, you might have heat stroke right now. Everybody that is watching had like an umbrella or like a little shade or like a da-da-da-da-da. You are the only one here that is literally fighting to the death. Do you know what I'm saying? And I thought that was fucking wonderful. And that whole scene was in black and white. You know what I mean?
Amazing choice.
A fantastic choice.
The planet that the Harkonnens are on, right? And like, I was watching this video this morning, actually. The whole fucking monochromatic setting, and I'm using that word from my little brother because I watched it with him.
Nice.
That's it.
I wanted to slide that one in there. The reason.
Continue, sir.
Anyway.
Too easy, Jason.
But the planet is actually kind of like, or their sun is a black sun. That's why it was black and white. That's sick. Because it kind of like sets the tone for what House Harkonnen is. Because the black and white, like, just as an aesthetic, can sometimes be very sleek, classic. And when you look at the House Harkonnen's attire, it is a little bit sleek, classic. But then, and other times,
the shot felt so modern, like
really, really grimy.
Yeah, well,
especially when you look at Austin Butler's character.
It was definitely a thematic and stylistic choice to like make the House Harkonnen in the scenes with them look that particular way.
And I think it's such a great contrast to have them like in this nice, classic, sleek setting, but then House Harkonnen as a people are like, you know, they're savages,
Oppressors.
But it's mad. They're savages, okay, but they're also well organized, well oiled, and then all of their like all of their buildings are grand, and even the scene where Austin Butler's character was like walking through and he was about to get like seduced by the one of the Bene Gesserits. Even that scene where he was like, you know, looking around and stuff, and he was like, I don't think I've been here before. You know what I mean? It's beautiful, just stunning. Yeah. Everything was stunning. Mm-hmm. Like it was, and you said like it felt classic, right? But it also felt so modern at the same time. Do you know what I mean? And but yeah, like obviously, like with you were saying earlier with Stellan Skarsgård. Every time you went into like his room, it felt like it was like 2300 or like the year 3000 or whatever it is. Like it felt so modern, it felt so cool because he had this whole suit on. He's getting out the water. He's like, whatever.
He's in his Voldemort bag.
He's in his Voldemort bag, fam.
The designs, the CGI, the like as the whole SFX team. Like
it didn't feel rushed. It felt like they took the time.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like they took the time. And I'm gonna bring this comparison. I'm not doing this to shit on them, right? But when you look at the money that was spent on kind of like the CGI and everything, but then you look at similar money has been spent on Marvel productions, and you can really tell the qualities in terms of like taking your time with something rather than kind of like, okay, cool, we'll throw money at it, rush it out at this X by X date and have it here. And like it is one of the films where I came away from it and I was like, this is like
cinema,
yeah, like as in like we got a blockbuster as a blockbuster, heavy money, heavy production, and like
really, truly old school way of shooting it. You know what I mean? Just flying out, going somewhere. And
more practical stuff.
It's all practical stuff.
Yeah, it's more practical stuff, but like even in the CGI, because obviously, for example, like the spaceships and stuff like that, like they looked so seamless in the film. Whereas like, as I'm saying, like with Marvel and even DC for a matter, you look at those things and you're just like, you can tell that this does not look good. And yeah, I like
it's tough. Look,
just be quality with your stuff. That's all I'm saying.
It's one of the best shot films I've watched in cinema. Yeah. I feel like every shot and every frame was done with a lot of intention behind it.
Oh, for sure.
With a lot of thought behind it. And just like again, speaking to what how Denis speaks about films and what he appreciates, you can tell there's a lot of love taken into making such a film.
Yeah.
But yeah, brilliant shot.
For sure.
Definitely, man. We've kind of delved into it briefly, I would say. One of the other aspects of the film that stands out, aside from the aesthetics for me anyway, was the themes.
Yes.
And like the way it relates to like the world we live in today. The way power, religion, faith, this messiah thing that a lot of religions have are used to garner people, used to like garner people's faith in somebody
control
or something
them.
to control people, to manipulate. We see it in our life today. We are all religious, I believe, as well. So we can kind of relate to that to some extent anyway.
Of course.
How do you think Denis and the writers of the film told that aspect of the sort of those particular themes and then that struggle of, on one side, Timothy being that messiah, on the other hand, the oppressed or the people that are being manipulated, the Fremen people, essentially.
Even another angle is the non-believers. You know, like they're almost
and
forced.
What was interesting was the difference in the younger Fremen people who didn't believe, but the older people were very much looking for something to believe in.
Mm.
And I found that a very clever, simple yet clever contrast in the younger generation to the older generation.
Yeah. Just like as we're on the belief thing as well, like a massive change from the books to the thing is that Shani in the books is actually a massive believer of Paul.
Oh, okay.
It's
of Paul or
of Paul
of
or like
of Paul and the prophecy.
Okay.
But like she wasn't a prophecy.
By the way, sorry, I hate that his name is Paul. Randomly,
yeah, it's crazy.
Like look at Stilgar, Shani.
His surname's Brazy though. Atreides is a cold name.
His surname is cold.
Atreides is Brazy.
It doesn't feel right.
Now, Paul Atreides flows, man. Paul Atreides flows.
Paul Atreides flows.
Yeah, the full name, full thing.
No, but the full name flows.
Yeah, that's what I said. But
you're
repeating me, bro.
You know what he's like, my name is.
One time, I kept repeating you.
Yeah.
Someone was like, is that echo in the room?
Who said that?
Bobby.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What episode is that?
I was doing purpose, by the way. I was doing it on purpose. but like that's a I saw Denny say that he tried to stay as loyal to the books as possible, mm-hmm. but he was like, obviously you've got to make one of the changes, right? You know what I mean? And he was like, one of the changes, one of the big changes was obviously Shani's not believing in Paul, he said that he'd done that. Okay, so then the end scene, the final scene, which is the same by the way, final scene in the books was more dramatic, was more powerful, right?
Zendaya, by the way, man,
yeah, fan.
Every single time she just goes up on my estimation,
bro, fantastic, right? But like.
I was already there. You're just catching
up. Of course
up.
You were.
You man are just catching up now.
Of course you were there.
But like the belief and stuff, and like she, I think that's such a massive risk to take from the books where like she doesn't believe in him. Also, she was a massive believer in him. She was in love with him, right? So maybe she didn't believe in him totally, but the love just like blinded her. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? But I think she's a wonderful contrast to the main theme, which is obviously religion and politics and blah, blah, blah. So, like, I think the interesting
like, crossover of faith and politics and religion.
How they all intertwined.
It's so good.
To what? To control, essentially.
Yeah, I think...
Manipulate.
A great job displaying the difference between the believers and the non-believers, especially with Shani and Stilgar, specifically, and even what Jesus said in terms of, like, confirmation bias. When Rebecca Ferguson's character, name's completely escapes me, when she drinks
Lady Jessica,
when she drinks the
water of life, yeah,
the water of life, and then we're saying, oh, she should be dead. The dessert is a miracle. This is also in the prophecy, but then Paul comes out and says, no, we trained for this.
Yeah,
like, exactly. We've been trained, so it's not a surprise that she survives it.
Yeah,
and it's just a complete contrast in terms of what people want to believe. But even when he gets sent out into the desert by Stilgar, like on one of the nights, and he's essentially like, no one really survives this.
Set him up to fail, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then Shani goes and helps him out. So essentially you're helping out with
that Jon Snow thing.
Yeah.
But
no, let's not be disrespectful.
Not literally, yeah.
But yeah. So just like, I really, really appreciate the terms in terms of like I love that in literature in terms of like prophecy. Like, I love reading books about prophecies. And giving reasons behind the legend. There's a book that I love, The Name of the Wind, which essentially, it's at the end of the story and the person is reliving all the stuff that he's done. But obviously he has such a legend, such a myth about him, about all this grand stuff they did. Yeah. But when he breaks down what he actually did, it's like, bro, you're just a normal nigga. Yeah. you're just a normal guy that obviously people see what you do and they over-exaggerate or they hear whispers and then it gets passed on and then now it becomes legend. And a lot of the stuff that Paul ends up doing just becomes legend, surviving the dune over by that by himself.
And then, like, when he becomes kind of like, because, like, amongst the Harkonnen, when they're ambushing, like, he's called the Mual Adib, who's like this guy who strikes fear in our heart.
Yeah.
Like, going back to your point of like doing, I don't want to say him ambushing is simple, but like he's doing like small skirmishes, but like his legend grows.
Yeah.
People start fearing the name. They hear Mual Adib and they're thinking to themselves, like, oh my god, like, this must be the realest thing ever. These times, then, you know, you come across Paul and you're thinking to yourself, like, oh,
you're just a normal nigga.
That's the guy.
But no. they do a great job displaying that and showcase that.
By the way,
he's a really faithful. These are just like coincidences.
Yeah.
You said the quote you were alluding to was, I must not fear. Fear is the
mind killer.
The mind killer. Crazy.
In the film, which character arc stood out to you guys the most and why?
That's not a big thing for me.
I don't think we can talk about arcs just yet.
I think you can. I think
the one that pissed me off was fucking Beast.
Oh, David.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think he got
that means it still stood out to you though, because there was a huge contrast in from the first film to the second.
Yeah, he seems so powerful, man.
I think they did it on purpose because they wanted to, especially with Fayd Raha.
But they
gassed him too much in the first one. They almost made him seem like the reason why they took over the Atreides family. Do you know what I'm saying?
And then now he just feels useless in the second film.
Exactly.
Yes, I agree. They dropped him out.
And then his little brother comes in, and then like within the first day, he's doing way more than you. I don't like that. I think it was weak.
I mean, we're probably gonna get into in terms of like what we didn't like. There have been a few missteps, so to speak, but
that was a big one for me still.
Yeah, but just to kind of like answer your question, I think maybe Sh- Chinese or just yeah. like. And
I think Chinese.
I enjoyed her story because there's an internal conflict in her where she grows to love this person.
Yeah.
And I think they did that very well in the film. I think yeah, it was a slow burn of their relationship. Yeah, I think
yes.
Considering how long the film.
Nah.
I think they rushed their romance. I think like especially when they.
It started from the first film though. Yeah, I got a deep that.
But to be fair,
the first film didn't explore their relationship.
She met him at the end of the film.
She met him at the end of the film, and I think the time that they spent together.
They spent a lot of time together.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't think they're rushing.
I felt a little bit unearned. I'm not going to hold you. Like,
it's because he's in there. You're just jealous.
He's jealous, bro.
What you said is
like, first of all, that's neither here nor there. But I just felt a little bit rushed. I didn't think that they spent enough time. Exploring kind of like their time together. Like, yes, we've seen them in a lot of scenes together, but like they spent a lot of time, you know, doing ambushes. I didn't think they spent a lot of time building that emotional.
That builds it, bruv.
That definitely builds emotional.
The thing is, though, you've never done like a Bonnie and Clyde thing. We all have, innit? You know what I'm saying? It's like.
I said Bonnie and Clyde.
Let me do a Bonnie and Clyde thing, and I'll get back to
you. Thank you. Thank you.
Come back to the yes, Sam.
You had normal love. You toxic love.
Season 4.
The relationship between the firm and we spent a lot of time doing stuff like this. They're so close because they're doing stuff like this. And obviously, she's spending so much time with Paul doing this.
But it's turning her on. You got a deeper, bro. He's that scene where he's like running through like the sand, and then he's trying to stay underneath the shadow, and then he just drops down and like slides. I saw her go, shit, man.
Saying she tweaked a little.
She tweaked a little, but she's like, damn, like what? Is that my guy?
She looked at him.
But the next scene, they were pamming, fam.
Lost a bit of moisture.
Literally, bro. Hey, shout out to Tom Hollander.
Oh, yeah.
That's my guy.
Kicking and screaming and throwing.
I'm finished.
Because I would have been too.
That's my
you
guy.
Were.
I was in the cinema.
Also, yeah.
She had to watch Tom Holland getting back shots in.
Okay,
in,
man, right.
In one of his shows.
That, okay.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah.
It's true. An eye for an eye.
It's true. Also, if we're staying on the.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Florence Pugh, she looked stunning.
Is that better? You?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Good milk for you?
Beautiful.
Good milk. Like, good milk for you?
Great milk.
Okay.
Like, yeah. I'm talking whole milk, fam.
She seems like a good vibe as well.
But she seems like whole milk that would just make you want to go to the toilet, man.
Maybe we should have been on the presser for that. I don't know.
Huh?
We
should have
said anything else.
Yeah, you could have said anything else.
Whole milk is not good for you, man. You know what I mean? But she is just...
Personally, we should have been on the red carpet for that, but that's a conversation.
She's steam milk. Yeah. Now we should have been on the red carpet. Actually, speaking of that, actually, okay, guys, you did attend the online press conference, okay? So are there any quotes from there that we can talk about and, you know, clip, because I promised them that we're
fucking gonna... finished.
So,
on record now as well.
Yeah, no, I did watch it. It was interesting just hearing the actors talk about their experience in terms of working together, not working together in some instances as naturally. As you mentioned, I think Austin Butler didn't spend much time with someone like Timothy Chalamet until the third act, or like the final scenes of the film anyway. So that was what really stood out to me, I guess, was just the whole Denny talking about the film process. He's such an interesting guy. And obviously the quotes that came out the other day about the quotes about not really caring about dialogue, which I completely don't like, but I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. It was what really stood out to me. About the press conference, yeah, it was that. It was really interesting, because obviously, I don't know if you guys have seen, there's been a lot of speculation about, the cast don't like each other. It's complete cap. Like,
okay, I was going to say. Cause
yeah, they squashed it immediately. Like, I saw that.
But they even did the most to make sure people knew that they liked each other. Like, I feel like they did a bit too much.
Florence Pugh and Timothy Chalamet had that. Yeah, Chalamet Bimbo thing. That had a whole thing where, you know, he was apparently
films together before.
Bare films. But he was apparently not due on set for like days, but he would come on just to watch our scenes. You know what
she's
I'm saying?
A bad actress.
Huh?
She's really good at acting.
She's fantastic, bro.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
She's absolutely fantastic. I'm
really intrigued now what her character's sort of journey will be. And
well, I know.
No.
Do you want me to tell you?
I mean, if it's not, I don't. Yeah, fine.
No, I don't think it's a fucking spoiler.
Yeah, go on.
You know what I mean? But obviously,
you're more presuming because we don't know what they're actually gonna do for the film.
Correct. I'm just talking about
based on what you know already. Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, like because obviously they changed Shani's arc now, right? Mm-hmm. But what is the original story? Okay, is that Shani is so in love with him that she understands why he's doing what he's doing.
She's a concubine.
Yeah. But what Paul does on the day that he proposes to Florence's character, what's her name? Sorry, Florence's character is called Princess Urulan.
Yeah,
Urulan. Yeah. The first day that proposes to her, he makes it clear to her that you are a pawn and this is my wife.
This is political gain.
Yeah. They kind of like allude to it at the end of.
Not really, because she leaves and she's like, that's what I'm saying. It was more dramatic because she wasn't a believer.
That was the change from the actual.
That's the change. Yeah, that's the change.
What I was gonna say was because there was a little bit before.
Looks at her,
and even Paul himself was like, she'll come around. Like, as in Shani's character, mm-hmm. will come around to understand what I am.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he says to Shani that you'll be the only woman to bear my children.
Yeah.
Right? And then what happens is that...
That's in the first film, yeah.
In the second film, right? No. I'm saying this is what happens... And then, like, what happens is that the princess just plans... She plans an assassination attempt on Paul, but that's like as far as I know. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm. But which again, the whole politics, the scheming, the backstabbing, yeah. that's what makes.
But she gets taught that by the Reverend Mother in the second film, which I thought was really interesting as well, because you almost see you almost see this beautiful contrast here between Paul in the first film and his mother and his teachers. He had all his teachers. He had Josh Brolin, he had
Duncan.
Jason,
Duncan,
and all these people, they're all teaching him different things. He even had the medical guy who betrayed them, you know, okay? He had all these like small people that were like teaching him certain things about different worlds, different policies, blah blah blah. And then you almost get this exact opposite transition where actually she's getting the same lessons just from different voices and different people. She's her first scene is talking to her dad, who's the king, right? And he's talking about like certain things, and he actually lies to her right at the start and tells her that he didn't kill Atreides people. Okay, yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Okay, but then and then obviously the Reverend Mother said if he didn't kill him, like that wouldn't be kingly. You know what I mean? Like he has to know what is happening, and you almost can tell that the Bene Gesserit favor women. You know,
they do.
Like they favor them strongly because she tells them the truth.
Paul wasn't meant to be a boy.
They
called him an abomination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got the voice or whatever the power is.
Exactly. He's not meant to have it, right? But it's because he got taught that as well. Mm. Right? And it's like that beautiful contrast, okay, is sick because it almost at the end you almost get like it actually makes sense that they'd get married. You know what I mean? It almost makes perfect sense.
I think it plays to the whole idea of like what Gaz was saying as well, like the whole destiny aspect of it all, because I think Paul has seen, because after he drinks the poison he can like see the future fully now, and when he does that, I think that's when he's like, okay, I'm all gung-ho about the prophecies. Mm-hmm. I will do everything needed to lead up
question.
To the holy water
so
and stuff like that.
My only question around that, does the water change who you are, or is
or
that
amplify
exactly
who you are?
I think it's like the second, like it amplifies who you are, because like from what I understood, when you drink the poison, especially if you have like those powers of the Bene Gesserit, you start hearing certain voices, mm-hmm. so to speak, which I also find quite funny, because Stilgard, when he sent Paul out into the desert, he was like, you know, there are spirits, djinns that can possess you. I was sitting there when he drinks the poison, I think those are the quote unquote djinns,
right?
Or like an idea of a djinn where you start hearing voices where they're telling you all these things, which could come back to the whole confirmation bias things as well, and it just amplifies the kind of like maybe the subconscious thoughts and ideas that you might have of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then because with Paul, I think he I think he deep down he knew he would have to do whatever is described in the prophecy, and then when he drinks the poison, it's like, okay, cool. Now I've got no choice but to do it in that sense. So yeah, that's the answer to your question. Really.
Question to you guys: Zendaya, Florence Pugh, Austin Butler, Timothy. Do you think we're now seeing? You could even go with Kingsley Benn and Lashana Lynch. Do you think we're now seeing like a? I wouldn't say there's like a shift in terms of superstar. I don't think we're going to get superstar film actors again. At the height.
I don't know.
Like the Denzel. Do you think they're like the new generation that are coming through?
Oh, for sure.
Who are going to be like the main.
I think so.
And I actually think that.
I disagree.
And do you think this film will amplify their status as those?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that the way that they're coming in, the actual pace in which and the film choices and that stuff. I think what's so sick now is that there's a lot more film choices to be made. Whereas back then, it felt like every couple of years, a certain film genre was like just was dominating, right? Mm-hmm. And since 2008, you can arguably say that the superhero genre was dominating. But the past seven past like 7 years, it's still dominating, right? Mm-hmm. But.
There's an appetite for more.
There's an appetite for so much more, right? So then there's so many more different films, independent films. There's studios that are doing a lot more work. And there's studios that are, like, not having to rely on the big three, which is obviously Warner, Universal, and Disney, right? So there's a lot of studios, okay, that are, like, expanding, like in that way as well. Meaning that we get a bigger... a variety of actors and actresses, we get a bigger variety of like people that are actually coming into the game a lot older and a lot younger, you know. So,
being one of them, I know he's been in the game.
Shout out to him, by the way.
Yeah,
very, very impressive.
But the entry points are easier. It's no longer you're fighting for a role against a million people, you're almost fighting for like 200 roles, you know what I mean? And it's what you make the most of it of, right? So now we're watching films like the Holdovers and American Fiction and these films, and we're appreciating them so much. Okay, because
my question, interrupting you again,
yeah, go ahead.
Is, are other people, we could sit here and talk about how great we think The Holdovers is, or we might think American Fiction is. Poor Things,
yeah.
We love these films. Getting your average viewer to person that just wants to watch a film.
But I think that's part of our job. I think that's part of like, I think PR's changed, marketing's changed, everything's changed, okay? I think actually we play a more pivotal role. And when I say me, I don't just mean the post-credit scene podcast. Like I mean us people that do these things, okay? Right. We talk about these things and we introduce them to new audiences. Or audiences, okay, by the way, that might have seen a poster but not know much about it or that kind of stuff. We are just an entry point. And I don't think while we had like the Brad Pitt years, the Denzel years, the Will Smith years, blah, 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 I don't think there was a lot of like entry points for wider audiences. It was what you see. Bro, I used to watch films, guys, I swear to God, when I was a kid, on bus billboards. If I saw that, oh, March 6th, I'd be like, sick, oh, like a wavy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I saw it. Whereas now there's like an online presence. We can influence it in different ways. So yes, I do think that
you call yourself a film influencer, good friend.
No, I'm calling.
I mean, no, essentially, that's what it is. I was setting you up to say yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like I don't.
That's what we are.
That's what we are. Okay, and that's what like a lot of our peers are now.
You know, is the way you asked it.
that's scheming
with that voice. Yeah.
I was like, no, that's what we're influencer now. That's nasty. I mean, essentially, I think that's the lane that we're in. Question: who's the white boy of Hollywood right now?
Oh, Timothy, easy. Look.
Timothy or Austin, one of the two.
Austin just had one role.
I think Glenn Powell's coming for them. Pause. Glenn Powell's up there as well.
I think Jacob as well.
What's the guy from The Bear?
Jacob Elordi?
Yeah.
What's the guy from The Bear?
Jeremy Allen White.
Jeremy Allen White could be a good shout.
Hey, he's doing.
He's everywhere.
He's
everywhere.
No,
man.
Nigga's great. Cut as hell.
I think what the difference with Jeremy in comparison to Timothy's
a star
or Jacob is that I just feel like the love for women's a bit different, and I think that's what makes the biggest difference in terms of like being that, like for example when you like Leonardo DiCaprio when he was
Tom Holland,
is that one you kick that man, he said
yeah it's Leonardo DiCaprio when he was
ending right
when he's the guy is yes that love is a bit different, so I will go with Timothy and Jacob. I think
yeah, okay,
I'm going for 200.
no way.
Nah.
No.
Tom Holland is a sweetheart,
maybe
bro.
A couple years ago.
How many fucking followers he's got? He's the new RDJ, bro.
But that wasn't the question. The question is more like who's current white boy of the month.
But that's what I'm saying.
Who's the white boy in Hollywood right now?
Tom Holland.
It's not Tom Holland. Not Tom Holland. I would agree. Timothy over. I do think Austin is up there though.
The only thing that Tom Holland's love for is Spider-Man. Like literally all these other films. No one loves him for that.
Uncharted.
Nobody loves Uncharted.
No one loves Uncharted, bro.
I love Uncharted.
Why would you go lie like this?
Just speaking of go on. Might as well just keep it going. I do feel as though we didn't get enough of Austin Butler's character in the film.
We didn't get enough.
And I think he went out too quickly for me, yes, considering how he'd been built up as a character.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed his scenes, and I enjoyed the fight scene with Paul Atreides in the final act of the film. I thought that was a great scene. I just wanted more of that, if anything.
Yep.
Which, just jumping off that, because we haven't mentioned it as of yet.
But I think we should repeat that point just for the camera, you know.
Oh, okay, yeah. No.
I think that'd be a good one. So, because you might have some editing to do. One minute.
You can use the big one.
Oh, for the edit?
Yeah.
Oh, continue.
Yeah, so just for the action choreography, I think is such an underrated aspect of the Doom films, even in the first ones where Paul is training with...
Oh, the scene with Josh Brolin's character.
Yeah, Josh Brolin's character. And then even in the second one, like as you said, like the final battle between the two, or even just kind of like the major skirmishes of the Fremen when they're ambushing people, the way they kind of like lie in the sand. And I know they did some editing trick where, like, you know when they're in the sand, mm-hmm, and they just sprint out of the sand, the pace and speed of it all, like it felt so impactful. And then the way they fight, and like they do fight like with these whole guerrilla tactics and whatnot, and I was like, wow, that is just like so emblematic.
It speaks to them being oppressed and fighting back against the oppressor.
Exactly, like tactics. Using their desert
to their favor.
To their favor, for the advantage. And like just how like certain fight scenes, or just fight scenes in general, are able to be another form of dialogue to express themselves, of a character or a people or anything like that. And I think this film does it really, really well.
And I think the film is good in the sense of it doesn't rely on those huge action sequences to be, but I still would have liked a bit more of that in the film. That was one of my things, not really? Disappointments. I would have liked more. That ideally wouldn't take away from the storytelling aspect and the whole visuals of the film. But I'm an action guy, and I like action, and I think the type of story that this is, where it speaks to fighting back against an oppressor.
No.
I would have benefited from maybe one or two more high octane scenes.
I think like they, like as Manny was saying, like everything felt purposeful.
Definitely.
So like the action scenes that we got were purposeful, like to everything that was happening.
Yeah, definitely.
And I just want to shout out one last thing, because it just popped into my head. Like just going back onto the point of fighting being another form of dialogue, when Austin Butler and Timothée Chalamet's character, they're having their one-to-ones, the stances that they both take is so kind of like
well choreographed, man, beautiful, all
beautifully choreographed. And like Timothy's, like the way he stands is kind of like
there was a huge difference,
defensive, kind of like calculating, whereas Austin Butler is just kind of like just there, just standing brutish, just all about offense. And you kind of like, if you didn't, okay, not saying that if you didn't know anything about the film, but just looking at them, you can kind of get of what type of people they are. And I just thought that was beautiful. Well, okay. A great film.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Any negatives, any nitpicks for you about Dune Part 2? Elaborate.
I didn't mind that. I
think especially throughout the first half, I didn't think we didn't get enough time between Shani and Paul to build that romance. When we did get that payoff of them kissing and then kind of like spending that time together, I didn't feel...
Oh, so you needed to see them kiss for there to be chemistry?
No. I feel like they had good chemistry, but I just didn't think that for them to kiss felt right in that moment. I was just like, oh, it's a little bit early. I thought it was a little bit unearned in that sense. And like, it's a bit... I'm just going to be a critic for a critic's sake. Because I do realise that they are kind of like adapting a book, and there's a lot of things to get through in that film, despite it being
so much.
2.5 hours long. I feel like there are certain things that you're just going to have to sacrifice. And I do think that the relationship between Paul and Jani was sacrificed a little bit.
Oh, I disagree so strongly.
And so I feel I needed more to feel that love.
I think one of my nitpicks is essentially a me issue, in the sense of you might have to re. So for example, doing part one, I watched it, loved, and I didn't love it. Rewatched it at home, liked it a bit more. Watched it again after watching part two, liked part one more. Which speaks to the whole, I guess, in my mind and the way I saw the film, there's a lot of lore and mythology and characters to understand, keep track of, and just have a general understanding of the Dune universe. And that can be overwhelming when you're tracking, when you're watching the film, I think, for me.
It is overwhelming, to be fair. Like,
and it might take you a watch, and you might have to watch part two, you might have to watch part one again to get a fully, well, for me, that was my experience, to get a, like, a full, concise understanding. And even now, I'll still say there's so much that I've probably missed in the first two films. And I think that's probably not my issue in terms of it's the film's fault. It's more like I'm going to have to dedicate some time to this film and to the sort of Dune universe. Because I'm not invested. I wasn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't like a year ago, but now I'm fully invested in the Dune universe.
Because bear in mind, like, we still, because there are five great houses, I think, like, including the Emperor, and we haven't heard anything about the other houses as of yet.
But you're almost, isn't it? Obviously, right at the end.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, right at the very end. But, like, just goes back to Gaz's point about it being, there's so much lore about Dune, and it's hard, and it can feel overwhelming when you jump into it just from the films, and then just being like, okay, cool, who do I need to keep track of? Why is this person important?
Yeah.
Like, they throw a little bit of, like, for example, like, the whole idea of the Bene Gesserit.
Yeah.
Like, if you just watch the first and second film once, you're just like, who the fuck are these niggas? Like,
in a sense, you could argue it's kind of similar to Game of Thrones, in that sense of Game of Thrones has less mythology and lore, there is some, but there's, like, so much to keep track of, so many different characters.
You almost forget sometimes about certain little plots.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
until you rewatch.
Until you rewatch.
And they're like, wow.
Yeah, of course.
I think that's my problem with Dune as well. I think that the story's could have been expanded on a bit more. Even the world building could have been a bit better. The showcasing of Dune was amazing. But there's so much out there, especially what they talk about, it could just been explored a bit more. So I'm hoping in the third film, with the other great houses, we get to see a lot more of the universe.
Oh, so your world building is more like the universe itself rather than the lived in world. It's more like the expanded.
The expansion, but even because the lived in world is that, even in the lived in, even where the Fermin were living, I don't feel like we got to see enough of, like, I don't need to see much, but enough of the day to day. It didn't feel lived in, like the.
Yeah, the depiction like of the South was minimal.
Yeah, it didn't feel like this is actually a place where people live.
Just understanding day to day customs and what people, what people eat, for food and things like that.
Even like I did appreciate that, like when they talked about the different dialects as well. They mentioned that. I like that type of stuff with film. I feel like they could have done a bit more, talk a bit more about traditions within between North and the South. They could have touched on other planets and their language. I don't know, just a bit more world building would have satisfied for me.
Yeah, no, it's a sci-fi film. I agree. Like, but I think it just relates to just how fucking massive the Dune franchise is. Because, like, Dune doesn't just rely on the books. Like, there are other supplementary that I'm not sure if they are canon, but they could be because it's canon. Like, for example, there are games, there are comics, that all kind of.
Well,
like,
don't forget the theory of this for Warner is you know, for it to be their Star Wars, isn't it? To have series in the next like 5 to 10 years and that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So, boom. But like my one thing, I think I said this after the screening, was the pacing of the third act. I feel like the first act, I was like, oh, cool, like, I'm really excited for this and stuff. And then, like, the second act, okay, we got.
You said that was your issue, right? You didn't like the second act.
Sorry, the second act. Yeah. So the second act, like, almost for me was too long, you know. And in the sense of, like,
is that a payoff for, like, what you get in the third when it's, like, quite.
That's why, like, I'm not totally mad. Do you know what I mean? Okay, like, the second act obviously was just, I just felt like it was like a pull between Paul's mum, lady, Jessica. I feel like it was just a tease from her for the whole second act. Like, oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna do this. Let's go here. She almost felt like she was just pulling him back. And but at the same time, I was okay. Like, we didn't really. I understand his motives at that point. I didn't understand whether he was trying to be part of the Fermin people or
it goes back to Gaz's point about the struggle, the internal struggle.
No, facts. It's just that it was so unclear for me in the second act, and it was so slow to even get to the point of what he was thinking or what his opinion was. It felt like we were hearing everyone else's opinion about him, but not his own.
Okay.
You know, and that kind of it didn't bore me strong, but it made me be like,
you know, what I would have liked is to see more of a conflict with Paul and his mother, because there were certain things she was doing.
But then that happened in like the third act, right? Where like he shouts at her. Do you know what I'm saying? And stuff like that. But this is what I'm saying. Like it kind of, when he took the water out of life, everything kind of just lifted. Do you know what I mean? Like the whole mood lifted, everything lifted. Even when he left Shani to go do that, and Shani hadn't seen him for like a bit because she's seeing him at the thing. She's standing up while everyone's bowing down and the whole shebang. Like that was so powerful. It was so sick. And it kind of showed different variations of like emotion throughout the, like that whole room was like the mother was like plotting, the people were like praying, Stilgard was like, I'm right, he was like, look who I am, Shani was like, you know what I mean, like it was so many different pieces that were so cool. But in the second act, like it just,
Stilgard as a character,
it took so long.
What I will credit Javier Bardem for is the fact that his character was comic relief, but it wasn't comic relief in the sense of we're using this joke to lighten the mood. It was essentially who his character was in relation to Paul Atreides and his belief in this sort of messiah, prophetic figure, if you like. So what we'll do, I'm going to do something different with you guys. I'm going to ask you to score particular people out of 10.
What, as nice. In, like the actors?
So first, Denis Villeneuve, score him out of 10 for the film.
8.
Who?
Denis Villeneuve.
I'm going to give him an 8.7.
Greg Fraser for cinematography.
1.5.
I'm going to give him a 9.
9.5, yeah.
I'm going to go a 9.5. And I give Denny a 8.5. Yeah. Timothée Chalamet as Paul Atreides, out of 10.
7.
I'm going to give him
8.1.
8. 8. 8. I'm going to go like a 7, 9 ish, 8. Yeah.
Yeah, 8. 8, I think.
Zendaya, Shani. 8.
8.
A 9.
Naturally.
Naturally. Six,
8.4.
Interesting. Did I miss something? You said that. Yeah.
He said 9 and said that he wanted to put a 6 in front of that.
Crazy.
Naturally. And Rebecca Ferguson as Lady Jessica.
8.5.
9. I think she was sick.
I thought she was cold. Yeah, I might go like an 8.7, 8.8. Still, I thought she was cold, man. Mr. Javier Bardem, Stilgard.
God, 9.5, fuck it.
Well, the best performance of the whole thing.
I'm going to give him another 9, man. He was cold.
I haven't seen Dick riding like that since Jada Fire was in a prime.
That's crazy. I know a porn reference. That's insanity. Oh, I'm going to go 8.4.
I ain't heard Jada Fire's name in
time.
That is
in a prime. You know how long ago?
I don't know who she is, by the way. I don't know who you're talking about.
Yes, I'm Brazy. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think it was
podcast.
Differently.
That's a different podcast.
Josh Brolin.
Oh,
as Gurney.
Days.
I think he's so good, bro.
Yeah, I'll give him an 8. I think it's a strong performance.
8.2. He need more lines.
Yeah, like it's hard to say we didn't get enough of him because I don't feel like
he's important enough.
It would have been relevant in the first.
By the way, I think it was so freaking wonderful when he keeps calling Paul your Lord, and everyone else is calling him whatever. I mean, he doesn't care that Paul is the Bene Gesserit. He sees Paul as the king of. So what the way that he's talking to him, he talks to him like he's his general, which he is, right? So Paul towards the end started treating him like Vassal General, because I remember he shouted him saying, "I'm Vassal Order." That's the first time he said that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like ever.
Which elevates the sort of tone shifting.
Elevates everything, and then like he almost goes, "Yes," and then just goes and does it, right? And he's leading this unofficial army. You know what I mean? It's freaking awesome. So yeah, like an 8.2. He didn't say much, but he was powerful enough.
I also enjoyed the unspoken conflicts of sort of the younger Fremen to Gurney's arrival.
Yeah, they're unsure about him, because I mean they were
I think it came up once or twice where they mentioned it, but it wasn't really like a, but it was still well delivered and well.
Shani said that she doesn't trust him.
Yeah. Well, well, he came in at a time where the trust for Paul went up. So it was like, if he came in towards the start of the film, it would have been peak, right? Because because Stilgar was still trying to convince people that of Paul. But yeah.
Austin Butler.
Oh, nine. 9.5.
8. 9, he was. 8, cool. 7. I wish he was used more.
Agreed. Agreed.
Fair.
For Austin?
Yeah.
8.5 because he wasn't used enough.
You get me?
More than anything.
Okay.
I hear it.
We haven't even finished yet. Florence Pugh. Princess Uru.
I haven't seen enough 8. Of her. 5. So I'm going to go with an 8.2.
I might even come as low as 7.
I might give her like a 0.5 because she's good milk.
I'll give her 8.5. I think
yeah, you know what? 8.1 for the performance, 8.5 for good milk.
I really enjoyed the scenes that she had with the Reverend Mother.
Amazing
scenes. I think that spoke a lot about the series as a whole as well.
Wonderful scenes.
Dave Bautista as Beast Rabbit.
6.
Five, seven, five, six.
I think
you can't. We're grading his performance.
His performance.
Yeah, it was still.
I'll give it a 6.
Yeah, I still think 5, and that is a victim of just how he was
written,
jobbed out, and written. And I think just because of that, he wasn't able to.
It's not his fault. It's not his fault.
It's not his fault. Yeah, at the same time, I think.
I actually think the first film, he was written too well. I think that's the issue.
Okay.
Too well?
Yeah, I think he was too menacing and too threatening and too powerful and too this. And then the drop-off was mad.
I don't think that's the issue in the first film. I think that's the issue in the writing in the second film.
No. Because if the book aligns him to be a pussio in the second film, then they have to set him up to be kind of a pussio in the first film. It's not his fault, fam. Do you get what I'm saying? But like, if there's no sort
as well,
it's like, a bitch sorry, thing,
I know,
fam.
I know we're kind of over it, but how he died, like especially because was it Gurney?
Yeah.
But Josh Brolin's character.
Gurney.
Yeah. So because obviously he gets fucked up by Rabin in the first film, mm-hmm. but then when they have their rematch, 1-2 hit and it's done.
Yeah.
Come on.
I'm telling you now, man. It was the writing of the first film. I don't blame the second film.
Right, last two, we'll do Christopher Walken as the Emperor. Shout out Christopher Walken.
I'll be so real. I don't 5-1 like Christopher Walken as an actor.
Damn dog.
Really?
I don't think he's. I don't know what it is. I just could never vibe with him.
Okay.
So yeah.
And
5 for me.
Lastly, Stellan Skarsgård, great actor. Superb. What a family that is.
9.
8, 7 again.
9. I think his death scene is so great, like him crawling to the throne. Even in his death, he's chasing Bro. Owl.
When he looked at the throne,
like the framing,
loved
it. And then like him, like even in his last moments, all he thinks about is power, and it kind of like is so it encapsulates the Harkonnen mindset, like power over everything. Yeah. Even in death, we will chase the bag and fucking rate it.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's cool.
9.5 actually. Yeah.
Dune Part 2 rating. Out of 10,
7.5.
Do you think the rating's gone up?
I think it was a 7. I think it's gone to 7.5.
Interesting that it's gone up. Normally, my film ratings kind of go down. My film rating's gone up as well.
Mine's gone up.
I have it at an 8.
I have it at 8.5. Yeah.
Okay. I have it 8.
That's a big gap. Yeah, pick one, fam.
8.5. I'll give it to an 8.5.
So 8.5. I'm gonna give it a solid. At the moment, I'm gonna give it an 8.4.
We're all within similar bandwidths.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
It'd be interesting if, well, I don't know if it would be interesting. We might get Basala cooked again, but it'd be interesting to see if she was here, what her thoughts would be.
Yeah, and you see, see it, it's the highest rated the film on IMDb.
Yeah, too far.
Is it?
Yeah. I'm sure it's gone down by that, though.
It's right now, it's at like a 9.
It was 9.4 at peak.
Yeah,
but that's a big episode at the beginning. Have talked about this film,
it's
like the film.
Oh, not usually, but usually.
Yeah,
it's not the film.
That was frustrating.
Yeah. I think the way people talk about this film, and I think that might be a TikTok problem, where people rate something.
It was the cast as well, though.
Nah, but I don't think it was. It was the actual critics at the screening.
Yeah, even Christopher Nolan coming out saying what he said. I think that's had a big influence in how people are describing the film to me.
Fair.
Because I'm like, it's a good film, but
it's an amazing film.
Do we hear people talk about it?
Is it the film of the decade?
No, it's not.
I mean,
but it could be the franchise of the decade if they get the next ones right.
I mean, yeah,
which is such a shame.
Yeah.
When you think that Star Wars is there.
No, it's not Star Wars.
I saw a whole video saying that essentially Star Wars took everything from Dune.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say everything, but it's like you, like in terms of like world building, it's heavily.
The breakdown of the storyline was insane to me, bro.
There was literally like any aspect of the film you could from a Star Wars aspect in terms of living planets.
Doom books.
Like, yeah.
And apparently it's been a thing for a while, and the biggest issue is because George Lucas has never mentioned
acknowledged or credited.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Damn. George Lucas is a hack.
My last question. I think it's been a good pod. So Dune Part 2. Oh. Yeah, hungry still. Dune Part 2 was supposed to come out last year.
Yes.
Didn't naturally act the strikes. It would be a Best Picture nominee, right?
Yes.
It'd be a nominee.
It'd be a nominee.
Yeah.
American Fiction, is it better or worse than
as a Best Picture?
Yeah. Dune or
better.
Dune's better?
Dune's Best Picture, yeah.
Dune, yeah.
Hate saying
as a
Dune's
Best
better.
Picture? Hmm? Yeah.
Dune's better.
Maestro. For those
Dune's
names.
Better.
Yeah, man, get Maestro the fuck out of here, bro.
Maestro's trash.
Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. So it's not trash. It's just
trash as fast, but get the fuck out of here, bro. Yeah.
I don't think I watched it.
Oh, it's not recording.
That's fine.
Yeah, we're like rad.
We're finishing it.
Yeah.
The holdovers.
Best picture?
I would keep the holdovers.
If he's winning over it.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying the holdovers won best actor and sport actor, right? Okay, so that's I let have that. But best picture? No.
Interesting.
You'd have Dune over holdover?
Dune over holdover. As best picture.
I'm taking holdovers over Dune for best picture.
Really?
What?
Okay.
I might make any sense.
Toss up to be fair.
Why?
Just, I guess the best picture for me always meant like a complete 360 package of like I know the holdovers had like some really, you know, beautiful scenes, right? But it wasn't like I feel like there should be like an equal 25% between like aesthetics, storyline.
It's never going to be a case though.
Of course, but I think Dune fits that more closely to the.
I think the only aspect that Dune does better than holdovers
is visually. And that's saying a lot because Dune is spectacular.
Yeah.
Holdovers was a great
visual. But that's enough for it to win the best picture.
I mean, I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at it.
You said it should be 25% across four categories, and now we're talking about one category, and that's enough.
Fair enough.
Good move.
Fair enough.
Well done. I like this conversation. This is cool. Dune Part 2 or Barbie?
Dune.
I love Barbie.
Hey, Basola. Oh, that one, still. Poor Things.
Dune.
Poor Things.
I like Poor Things too, so I think.
I know you do. I'm going to say Dune, personally.
Flip a coin. I'm happy with Eva.
Nah, too easy.
So be a bitch,
fine,
bro.
Fine. Dude, because it has Zendaya.
Say it over.
Niggas is tapped for that. But fair enough. Yeah. I need to watch. I'm watching Anatomy of a Fall next week. I think.
I'm watching it.
Ain't seen it.
I'm watching the cinema next week.
On Friday, innit?
Yeah. So we'll skip that.
Yeah, skip that.
Oppenheimer or Dune?
Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
It's not a conversation, I'm sorry.
I have to ask, okay?
Oppenheimer.
Killers of the... Solanke's fit. Okay. Yes, kept him in my team. Killers of the Flower Moon or Dune Part 2?
Dune.
Interesting.
I have fallen out of love with Killers of the Flower Moon. I feel like I've shown that in recent pods where I've been criticising it a lot more. But I think I rewatched it again.
Doing that Basola thing.
And I didn't actually... Like, I love the film, but I wasn't in love with the film.
Yeah.
I was silenced.
The Zone of Interest I'm watching next week, I think, or this week. But
but best picture. No,
Dune.
The Zone of Interest.
Zone of Interest.
I have seen.
Yeah.
They're doing like Cineworld, they're doing like Oscar screenings.
Right, yeah,
like,
it's got to watch it.
If you
need to get a fucking membership there, man.
Past Lives or Dune Part 2?
Past Lives. Jesus Christ, that is a film. Past Lives.
I'm gonna go Dune Part 2. I know why you appreciate it.
But
Past Lives.
I reckon I would probably agree with you on Past Lives. Past Lives is great. I feel like Past Lives is probably gonna have it.
I'm gonna go.
I know Huss would go Dune.
He's gonna go Dune. Past Lives is one of the best director films I've watched.
I love Past Lives.
I know, but I'm saying you
can. Oh, really?
I love Past Lives. It's a good film.
It's one of the best director films I've watched.
But I'm trying to think.
I'm gonna go Dune, but
do you know why I like Past Lives? It felt slow, but not fast.
Weird.
So good.
It's gonna emotionally wreck me.
Because Past Lives is quite a short film.
It is, but it felt.
No, but I think that's why it helps. That's what, in terms of the pacing thing.
Right.
About,
yeah. Yeah.
It's quite to the point.
It's to the point, but it doesn't feel rushed.
I'm with you. Yeah. No, Past Lives is a good film.
It tells its story.
I'm gonna go Dune based on my 25% theories.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm at it.
That was cool, man.
I actually think that Past Lives, yeah, this is going to be very controversial. I actually think Past Lives was edited better than Dune.
Yeah.
Yeah. Edited better. Yeah, for sure.
What an interesting episode.
I think if it was Dune was to be at the Oscars, I think the only one that would have won for me is probably cinematography.
Maybe best. Yeah. Maybe best. I think maybe best supporting actor
for
Zendaya.
Sorry.
So they might want.
She's not beating Divine Joy Randolph.
She's not.
Or even yeah, she's not being Divine.
The Divine's winning the Oscar.
But I'm glad she came this
year.
I mean,
she's won the critics, SAG, Golden Globes. Yeah, she's got that.
Even if they put Zendaya.
No, but it could be shared though.
Don't worry, Zendaya. In my heart, you've won.
Sorry, I like Zendaya.
I had to say that.
that Divine performance, nah. She doesn't win it, robbery.
And by the way, we need to interview Divine Joy Randolph.
We have to. We'll finish.
And also, interesting, we spoke about her winning when we did the Golden Globes at. We spoke about her and we hadn't watched the holdovers, which was mad interesting. Now we've watched it, we can actually appreciate why a lot of these films have been so revered. I think last year was an insane year for film.
Yeah.
And we got robbed because we didn't get Iron Claw, Holdovers, Poor Things
until this year. Until January,
I think Iron Claw we got almost 3 months later.
Iron Claw got snubbed, bro.
Snubbed. Yeah.
So I've watched stuff around that. It's Iron Claw.
I have Iron Claw over Dune, though.
It's Iron Claw because as much as I don't like the format of how people end up getting nominated for things, but one of the things that a lot of films do, apart from the exception of Oppenheimer and Barbie, is that they put their films through festivals, and that's how you get the buzz.
There's getting a lot nominated.
Iron Claw didn't do any of that, and it's jarring. But bro, like, you know the game.
They didn't play the game. Oh, Iron Claw, what a film!
Great film. Post Credit Scene Podcast, a 14 HQ original, lovers of film and TV. Make sure to check us out on all socials. Our TikTok is popping. So if you're not there, it's kind of your own fault. You're missing out.
Big man thing.
You have to order that one yourself. Instagram.
Order.
Post Credit Scene Podcast as well. You get me? Loads of great content on there, man. Games, reviews, insights. Basola being wrong about things. You cannot miss out.
Yes.
On art. You can't.
But she also went viral for being right about Mean Girls, which, you know.
I mean, right is subjective, but yeah. She had a good opinion about Mean Girls, which went like 230K or something stupid. Like.
Yeah, shout out to
that. And I saw almost viral clip somehow. It's a dark thing. But anyway, make sure to follow us on all socials. Post Credit Scene Podcast, you know the vibes. Your boy is over and out.
Hi, I'm Donald Glover, and you are watching or listening to the Post Credit.